Hi everyone, welcome to the Curve Mindset Podcast. I'm your founder and host, Lorna McGinley. Today we're joined by Justin Gardner. How are you, Justin?
I'm good. Excited to be on. Thanks for asking me.
No worries at all, mate. Can you just tell us a wee bit of background about yourself?
Yeah, so I think probably the reason why you've kind of got me on for a chat is because I'm kind of everywhere within the football space. So I started out as a football YouTuber, and then that moved into more the presenting side of things, and I've been a content creator surrounding the sport, whether that be a fan correspondent at a club like Celtic, or just some of the work I've done at clubs abroad. And then that's now moved into building up a football network, in which we now have a football agency, which we look after a lot of the commercial opportunities for athletes and footballers who want to grow their commercial profile, but also learn about media training and social media and player profile growth. And yeah, so it's all things into one, but started out within the football content creation space, and as always, when you start with a hobby, if it has a chance to bloom into your career, then you bite that hand off, and I'm certainly halfway through the fingers if I was biting that hand off just now. So yeah, enjoying it.
Yeah, because that's the, what is it, you don't get paid for your hobby, but you get paid to do something that you're you don't really like to do. But I know you, obviously, I've watched your YouTube channel and on Instagram too, and you like to be part of an audience, you know, that kind of comes naturally across. But a lot of coaches really struggle with live TV and interviews, you know, for maybe pre-match or, you know, during post-match, and emotions kind of get to the people. What advice would you give to kind of young coaches, or even coaches that are maybe less experienced, on some tips on how to deal with the media, and also maybe things that help players, you know, develop their kind of confidence a little bit more?
Yeah, so it's good that you asked that, because recently I've been kind of trying to get in contact with some clubs to offer their kind of media training, and it's a full kind of spectrum now. Years ago, it used to be the gaffer and the captain that get interviewed, and it was quite easy in terms of it was the same old thing, delighted with the win or really upset about getting beat today, but we move on to the next one. And it's really, it has been like that for so long. I think now the way the media is structured, certainly a lot more for socials and social media, there's a lot more content to be made, meaning there's more questions to be asked, and coaches, players, whoever that may be, maybe put into some difficult scenarios. For me, it's all about your confidence. You wouldn't be in the position you're in as a coach or a player if you weren't confident in the ability you have within that role, whether that be on the sideline or whether that be on the park. So it's just about expressing that confidence back to explain your game, and having a knowledge of the game helps. There's obviously a lot of coaches out there who have an untapped knowledge of the game compared to others, but expressing, maybe if, for instance, it's a defeat, they tend to be the most difficult ones and the ones you see coaches slip up on. It's more about, well, explain your game plan, explain why it didn't work, and give a kind of educated answer and things. And really that puts you across as not only professional, but really gives you a kind of breathing space when it comes to the media, because 9 times out of 10, these journalists aren't going to know half the coaching terms that you're talking about or anything like that. So yeah, it's just all about confidence and not being too shy or timid. A lot of people think journalists are out to get them. I wouldn't class myself as a journalist, but I certainly try and get the best answers out of anyone that I do interview. So yeah, more just confidence, educated answers, and just being aware of the scenario that you're in, and figuring out the best solution to answer that, whatever questions may arise.
Yeah, because I think I seen him with Mark Skinner at Manchester United Women, and he talked about like a zone 14s and different moot, and it was kind of caused a bit of stir in the community, you know, the coaching community, because the interviewer actually was asking him a really technical and tactical question. It was a bit of back and forth, and a lot of coaches liked that, and some people didn't like it. See, when you try to get that information out of the coaches or the people you're dealing with, is it, you said that you have to have a good knowledge, but is it also good to have in the right questions so therefore they can expand on that answer? Because a lot of people might not know that, but again, if you're in a football world, you have to ask football questions but also leadership questions. Is that something that you try and get the best out of these coaches so therefore you get a good answer out of them?
Yeah, of course. Like, for instance, last year I had the pleasure of interviewing Ange Postecoglou quite a number of times, and you know a read of the character before you go in. Ange isn't going to sit and give you really much on your answer that you ask him. It's more about you kind of read the room, you understand what the tension is, and listen, if Celtic had been beat 3-0 off the rivals, for instance, I wouldn't go in and say, oh, Ange, what did you make of that game today? You're asking questions maybe tailored to the situation of what went wrong, but what are the positives you take from that? Because someone like Ange, I'm just using him as an example, could be quite negative towards the media, so you try and kind of finish the question on a kind of up. So it really just depends on who you're dealing with. I think anybody in their profession would like to think they're well prepared. For me, it was obviously one of the most important things that I didn't want to go in and be slaughtered by a coach or a player or whatever questions asked. It was more surrounding, listen, how can I get the answer that I need, but in a positive manner? And I think that's the most important thing. Yeah,
because that kind of leads on to another question of presenting kind of pre-match. You need to have information beforehand, but I always remember Stevie Grieve, he talked about you need to have the right information, like the right stats to back up the right questions. So when you're, you know, working, you know, to develop, you know, more relationships and more kind of information on the coach, how do you select the facts? Is it just purely numbers you look at, or do you try and even look at, I know, but there's a kind of social aspect and emotional, you know, sometimes you actually have to ask a question that might lead to more a bigger answer, so therefore you get, like, coaches are not robots anymore. It was a very simple, as you said, everyone has a yes or no. Now people, it actually shows emotion, which is good, but having the right facts helps float their ego sometimes, the coaches, a little bit, and obviously they have to bring them down. How do you try and present yourself before the match, you know, with information that is going to help the viewers but also the coach become that bit better, you know?
Yeah, so necessarily before the match, you don't really speak to the coach, so it would be more us giving stats on the game and the upcoming fixture. So in terms of that, it's more a couple of fun facts in there surrounding stats. So, for instance, when we'd done Celtic versus Real Madrid in the Champions League at Celtic Park, we spoke about the last time they played was back in the 70s, and then we managed to try and get someone. We got George McCluskey's son who scored against Real Madrid in that fixture. So you're trying to bring the fixture together with a bit of positivity, a bit of connection from the fans, and also just really bring up the occasion to the highest height it can be. There's only so much you're going to be able to talk about, let's say, a game in the Lowland League, which is maybe mid-table, two mid-table teams going against each other. But if you've got a kind of fixture which has got a big appeal to it or is appeasing to a certain type of audience or viewer, you try and really work on that and build on it, and kind of more the snowball effect. You start with something and it leads into more, and hopefully you've got a good co-host or a presenter next to you who can bounce off you and kind of big that up. But more pre-match, it's again, if it's a big occasion, you would talk about, we're in Scotland, so we'll talk about Brendan Rodgers versus Michael Beale. It's the same thing. You're going to talk about their stats in the Glasgow derbies. Brendan Rodgers obviously been previously, so we would talk about his dominance in Scottish football before. We talk about Beale probably struggling last season against Celtic and really not being where he is. Has chance to turn things around, or will Brendan continue his dominance? And you try and use some wordplay in there. So that's kind of more where it comes with the coaches. But yeah, like you said, it's more about being prepared for the game, realising how big the occasion of the game is, and then portraying that back to the audience at home.
Yeah, because you've interviewed a lot of people, you know. What's the kind of prep for interviews? How do you try and prep yourself so therefore you've got, because as you know as well as I do, if you have the wrong question, then you're never going to get back in that room, or you're never going to get the full, you get a yes or a no answer. So what's your kind of your process for kind of prepping for interviews? Do you try and have a plan, or is it more of a, you go in and read the room first with different ideas, or what?
Yeah, so I have a real structured plan. Usually I look at the kind of broadcasters. Let's say you've got the BBC, STV, Clyde, whatever. Usually there's around about 10, right? 10 media broadcasters in there asking questions. So I make sure that I go in with 5 questions I'd be happy with if any of them get answered. The reason being is that I could go in with a question and someone from Clyde 1 could go in and say that exact question, and then you're stumped. Then what happens is you're trying to think of another question while the manager or the player who you're talking to has maybe answered another question that you might think of in that time. So I'm in there, I've got at least half the media in numbers usually in questions. But then I also like to listen to a coach. I think, I can't remember who it was, I actually think it was probably Ange again. A question kind of got asked in the terms of what I wanted to ask. but he made a really interesting point. So I kind of went back to that question and said, well, talking on your last point, the question that came from such and such, how would you maybe improve on that or whatever? So you're trying to get your answer, but you're trying to get a very unique answer. Sometimes the more unique questions get better responses from managers. Again, last season, I'm sorry, you keep using an example, but he's a great one because of the way he was with the media. Ange was very good that if you gave him a very unique question, he did elaborate on it. Pep Guardiola is another example. He's a manager, when you give him something that impresses him or is very unique compared to the mainstream media, he really likes it and he starts to elaborate and he gives you a better answer and can maybe give you answers to questions that haven't even been asked. He says, well, if I say, what did you think of the performance tonight? Because you had to switch from this formation due to them playing wide fullbacks, he would go, yes, but previously we played such and such 2 seasons ago in the Champions League and the same thing happened. So we're a similar setup. So you're trying to kind of add as much to the question without asking another question, if that makes sense. You're wanting to try and get the best point out of everybody. But yeah, preparation's massive. I used to have so many questions there, but not just 10 rubbish questions. I'd look for 5 good quality ones, depending on, like you said, reading the room. If one went great, you're like, okay, this is the mood that he's in. However, if it wasn't you to go first, usually I like to go first because then I got to set the tone. Obviously, I like to get my question in first anyway, but I feel I'm quite a positive influencer in terms of how I can influence a room or influence someone I'm talking to. So usually if I've got a smile on my face, the person back's going to be smiling, even if they've been beat. It's more trying to just take the positives out of everything. But sometimes, like you said, you can have a plan A, B and C, and sometimes it ends up being plan G. So it's all about preparation, really. I like, very similar to a coach. A coach may have 2 formations or 2 setups. Listen, if this is a big team we're playing, it's really important to get points against them. So they might sit in deep and try and play on the counter-attack. But when that goal goes in, it happened at the weekend with looking at Ross County when they played Celtic at Celtic Park. Ross County sat in a little bit, then Celtic went up a couple of goals and then they changed their game plan and next thing you know, Ross County got a couple of goals on the board. So it's all about changing your plan, very similar to a coach, when it's not right or when it's not working, or if it is working, it's maybe adding positives to it rather than trying to change it completely.
Yeah, because the thing about coaching is you need to have the right information to the right people, you know, to have. You can't give a lot away in news conferences, but also you can give. Some people give a lot and some people don't, but a kind of question on, you know, the coaching side, you know, do you, as a, obviously you've got, we'll talk about your kind of the other business later on, but
yeah,
see, for prep, for a kind of coach, how do you try and prep the coach, you know, because sometimes you have to work in the women's game, the men's game, the junior game, but very simple, you're going to have, may have 10 people in the room, or you may have 100 people in the room, or you may have one person interviewing you. How do you try and keep that person calm? You know, do you have a, I know that's kind of part of your business to try and do that, but a lot, even if kind of some basic kind of help for some coaches that might be getting to that stage where they actually are applying for higher jobs and they're actually getting them, but they're actually feeling the pressure of, well, I actually need to do a weekly news conference, or I've got something I need to do. How do you try and keep these coaches kind of relaxed? Is there a technique to use, or do you try and just, again, read the room and trying to develop the person more?
So it's very similar to, let's say, a player. You talk about a player like Lionel Messi, who's very agile, he's very quick, scores goals, dribbles in between defenders. He doesn't have the same qualities as someone like Sergio Ramos, a big player, who's sturdy, defensively minded. So every coach is different. So every coach is going to have their own techniques on how to deal with the media. I would say if you were a coach, though, listen, look at media training. That's something personally I've done for people I feel that benefits them. But at the same time, be prepared for your usual questions. So as the coach, you have a responsibility, of course, to take the team. And when the team doesn't perform well, the onus comes back onto the coach. And that's how it is. So be prepared for the 3 questions. Thoughts on today's performance? What went wrong? What's the positives to take from that? Usually that are the 3 questions that you're going to get asked. If you answer them, like, very well, then a journalist is kind of going to either be satisfied with them or is going to try and add on that. But like I said, it's coaches have so much knowledge that if, for instance, you were playing with one striker and it didn't work all game and he said, right, well, you played with that shape, so why did it not work? That's a coach's chance then just to explain what he's seen on the park. He's watching the game as well, just like the journalist would be or the fans would be. It's just his chance to give an explanation on why he feels it didn't work, and he kind of takes responsibility for that. But by explaining it in a certain way, it will help the journalist get a correct answer, it'll help the fans get a clearer vision of what went wrong or what went right, and also just add a bit of kind of, well, I know what I'm doing here, rather than sometimes coaches will get beat in defeat and they'll ask a question and they'll kind of freeze in the spot or they'll not know what to say and people are like, that guy's not got a clue, which is really not the process. As a coach, you would go into the dressing room and you would know exactly what went wrong the next day, when you would look at it in much more detail, whether that be through analysis or highlights, etc. Some of the stuff you maybe didn't see from the sideline. But it's all about just being confident in your own ability, going back to the kind of first question of confidence is key, because you wouldn't take a job if you weren't confident you could improve that team or lead that team. So it's just about explaining what's went wrong on the day or what's went right.
Yeah, because you've obviously, the experience you have of working at a top level, women's games, men's games, but yep. You've interviewed a lot of people. I know who your probably favourite is, but who is your favourite? But also, who was the one who maybe challenged you a little bit? Because sometimes you get a bit of banter, but sometimes you get a lot of bit of people who want to even have just go back because they want to ask you a question. And yep. The third part is, who would you like to interview? Who's the person you probably it's on your bucket list?
Yeah, so well, I'll start with the first two that were really difficult to interview. Kyogo Furuhashi was very difficult because he doesn't speak English, or I don't speak Japanese, so that was really tough because I've got quite a good personality, I feel, in talking to people, and will get a lot out of people due to body language and my smile or however the room has been read that day. When that interview happened, it was more through the translator and there was a pause and a gap and sometimes you didn't get clear answers, so that was difficult. Another one was Aaron Moy. Now, I loved Aaron when he was at Celtic and I think he was a great player even at Huddersfield and things, but Aaron's a very quiet and shy guy. So Aaron had just signed for Celtic and he was buzzing, but his interview was very shy and mellow and very 2-3 word answers, so it was very difficult to try and get what we needed out of him. But by like the fourth or fifth person that went round the room, he started to kind of come out of his shell a wee bit, and he did. He gave me a good answer in the end. But yeah, he was very difficult. And of course, anytime there's a language barrier, it's difficult. But you just do your best in the situation. Very similar. I know this podcast is designed for coaches, so very similar. Something's not working, you just have to do with what you've got. You might have 4 or 5 players out injured to use you on your starting 11. You just have to deal with what you've got. But in terms of the favourite people I've probably interviewed, although he's left Celtic now, Ange Postecoglou really was the first kind of big name I got to interview in terms of stature, what he was achieving at the Celtic at the time. He actually took to me quite well. I was one of the kind of guys where anytime I asked him a question, he always gave me a good answer. I never had any bad runs in with him. I know a lot of people in the BBC and Sky, and for instance, had a few run-ins with him, but for me, he was always great. I had the pleasure of meeting him outside the football space for a couple of times, and he always asked how things or whatever, blah, blah, blah. So I think once you build relationships up with managers or coaches, a professional relationship where they understand that you're doing your job and you just need to do your job and chat to them, you get a bit of mutual respect. And I think that all comes down again to what we spoke about, your preparation, your knowledge of the game. And for me, Andrew was brilliant. Kind of gutted to see him go in the way he did, but a great coach, and I think he'll actually do quite well at Tottenham, even though since he's went there, a lot of things have kind of not been in his favour with Harry Kane and that. But I did like him. Another one was Carlo Ancelotti. Just the stature of someone like him, had the chance to interview him, and just amazing. I was kind of sat there with my mouth open, my chin was touching my thighs that day when I got to speak to him. Had a brief chat with Pep as well, not a big one, but a brief chat with Pep. But listen, I've been very lucky to interview some cool names like Trent and Mason Mount, and like it's not till you look back and you realise who you've spoke to that you love them so much. But I think it was just me being a Celtic fan, which is quite apparent, is that when I was interviewing the Real Madrid manager who's playing at Celtic Park the next day, it was quite cool. So, yeah, that was an awesome one.
And then people you've kind of would like to interview, is there anyone who's maybe, do you know what, you could even have someone who's maybe passed away, you know what I mean, or someone that is totally like amazing, because it doesn't have to be football, it could be anyone.
Yeah, so my bucket list when I started this was always John Hartson and Scott Brown because he was growing up in my era, I'm only 26, believe it or not, so Scott Brown was a man in my childhood growing up that I loved and watched, and I was a central midfielder when I was younger, so him and John Hartson was just one of my heroes. Like, I just love John, so but I actually got a chance to interview John, so he's off my bucket list now. But in terms of people I'd love to interview, obviously Scott Brown's one of them, but I think maybe you said someone that passed away. I think Maradona would have been a great one. I just think, like, you could sit and have a really 1 hour conversation with him about talking football and everything, or you could really just end up absolutely steaming with him. You just don't know how the interview would go with him, so you don't know. So someone like him, I think, would have been awesome to get the chance to interview.
Yeah, because you go back to Ange Postecoglou, and it was I went to the Celtic convention last year, and I got asked the ask a question, and it was quite it was a question on, like, sacrifice, and it was just basically when he came back, because I always remember because he didn't have a team around him, he actually had to inherit a team, and he gave me this really good answer of sacrifice family, but it was like 20 minutes, but you could see the eye contact, and then see that when you actually, like, people get asked the same questions all the time, and people get sick of the same questions, but I thought I would ask him about something more to do with emotional intelligence and dealing with that. And see that way you get that way of thinking of, if you ask a good question, you're going to get a good answer. If you've a bad question, you get a 10 word answer. But yeah. I know as a massive, you're a massive Celtic fan, you know, I've been to a couple of games at Celtic Park, and took me to the standing zone bit, and then it was right in front of me, it was the Green Brigade, and I said to him, you're kidding me, aren't you? You've literally took me, and I'm not a Celtic, I'm a Chelsea fan, but he was like this, the atmosphere. I think they were playing the Dutch side Alkmaar, I think it was one of the kind of first games of the Champions League last year. But what's been your high, and what's been a kind of low for you as a Celtic fan, but also as a journalist, or even kind of two parts, you know, from a personal and a professional?
Yeah, so from a personal point of view, my highs would probably be growing up and seeing the club do a quadruple treble. Like, just, I think I'll look back on that in like 5-10 years and say, wow, like, maybe even 15 years and say, wow, I can't believe we've done that. It was a really awesome time for me, because I was still kicking about maybe kind of 18, 19, 20, 21 round about then. So that's the time when you're discovering the pub with your pals and you're going to the games more often. So That was one of the highs for me. I'll always remember that. Probably the lows is, of course, like, and it'll be the same on the other side of Glasgow, when you get beat off Rangers or you get put out off a big team in the Champions League or whatever, you're kind of gutted. Do you know what I mean? Things like that. As from a professional standpoint, probably my highs would be getting the access at Celtic. Like, got to interview some fantastic players, as mentioned, and fantastic coaches. Got to travel with Celtic across the world and following them, watching them in the Bernabeu and watching them abroad. So yeah, that would be my highs. There's kind of no lows in the kind of professional standpoint. I think more what access maybe clubs give you, or just trying to maybe put some ideas, is one of the lows. Like, I'd have loved to have been able to go into Celtic and say, listen, this is what really works within the social space, and I'd love to help you try and improve that, but the opportunities are very few and far between. So it's just, the highs are definitely watching your team win every trophy that they can, and getting to follow them from a professional standpoint and to foreign countries, and really add your own twist to it, and have a kind of reputation with the fans, because a lot of the fans kind of took to what I was saying, because I tried to be very unbiased within that, even though I was covering Celtic. I tried to give some knowledge across and respect what other fans' opinions was, and that's why we got them involved. So yeah, loads of highs. Lows, of course, is when you get beat off your rivals or you don't qualify for the Champions League. But
and then kind of a couple of questions on your business, you know, Talent ID, sorry, Talent 19. What is it? Yeah. Why did you come up with it, and what does it actually do?
Yeah, so 19 Talent was, of course, built from my experience of working with brands, and like I said, doing YouTube and being a presenter, I got a lot of opportunities to work with some fantastic brands, some fantastic clubs, and like, got the chance to work with Inter Milan and things, and honestly, some massive brands I've had the chance to work with, and that's just from putting myself out in social media. So it was more like, you see a lot of football players, like more like your Marcus Rashfords, your Ronaldos, your Messi's, being ambassadors for these big brands. So it was to me, well, if I'm working with the kind of middle brands and these big brands as a presenter, what can other athletes in the space do? when they put their mind to maybe just putting themselves out there a bit more on social media and really building their professional player profile and their image and really just enhancing that as much as they can. So a few months ago, I had the idea, like, listen, I'd really love to help a few players with it. And then the last 8 or 9 weeks, it's been launched and it's just kind of went crazy, if I'm honest. We've had loads of players get in contact with us and really just trying to get them commercially right, give them, like we said, media training, social media guidance, how they should really portray themselves on social media as a professional athlete because they represent the clubs that they play for, things like that. So it's more about just helping the athletes, give them the opportunities that I've got. And obviously I add my value in certain aspects and my niche of being football content orientated in the kind of sports space. But these athletes have their own niche in terms of all these health and fitness brands who want to work with them, and they can really get open up for sponsorship and individual sponsorship and things like that. So that's where it all came from. And obviously a lot of it was built from connections that I made within the football industry of the media space. But I feel that it's just about having the players guidance and support for, or giving them that, I should say, is our main priority. And yeah, just obviously looking forward to the future. It's so much in its infancy just now, but yeah, happy with how things are going, and so are our clients, so nothing to complain about.
And the kind of final question we always ask is kind of, what does mindset mean to you, and kind of from a media point of view, but also from a personal, because you're quite young, but you've achieved so much. Do you ever feel that you're always going 100 mile an hour, or do you ever try and slow down, or what's the kind of advice for maybe some coaches that are similar age but struggle maybe to put themselves out there?
Yeah, it's just about mastering your craft. I think I always thought I was a kind of jack of all trades, like, because I'm in so many, your fingers in so many pies, as they say. But it's more for me about, right, I can do this, can I do it to the best of my ability, and how can I constantly improve? So like, I'm always, for instance, I've not done any presenting over the last few months because I've been just working on other projects, but I still grab my mic and I'll still practice in front of the mirror, and I'll still watch games and analyse how other journalists speak to people, and I'll say that shouldn't have been asked that way, it should have been asked this way. Obviously that's my prerogative and my opinion, but it's constantly about improving yourself. So I'm always just trying to improve every day, and if I improve 1% every day, you've tripled what you were last year at the end of the year. So yeah, it's all about just improving every single time I can, and yeah, just mindset's probably about mastering your craft and just sticking to it. And no matter how many people say, I mean, I've had people at big companies say that I'd never appear on TV or do anything like that, and it's just about going and proving them wrong and saying, well, listen, this is what I can offer, this is why I do this and I do it differently. So no matter what the kind of the normal is, so like the norm is usually in my world, it's post-match interview, if you're an ex-player, you get on the TV, blah, blah, blah. It's not about that, it's about like, what can you offer? Why should you be there? We've seen it a lot more recently, so certainly in my industry, but that would apply to everything. Just constantly trying to improve and better yourself, and you can't go wrong that way.
No, perfect. Well, what a great way to finish, Justin. Thank you.
You're welcome, mate.